Welcome back to Cowpunchers, where the beer is warm, the women cold, and the bullets fly thick. I am the deputy's deputy, Melissa Huggins.
And I am the deputy, Stu Kaufman.
And tonight we watched 1998's The Mask of Zorro, directed by Martin Campbell, starring Antonio Banderas, Anthony Hopkins, and the best of the best, Catherine Zeta motherfucking Jones.
There was a lot of handsome people in this movie, my God.
So beautiful. Also, beautiful people, appropriate age gaps.
And it was fun. It was so much goddamn fun.
It was so good. So good. I had a blast. I was so worried that this movie was, because I saw this in theaters. I think I went with my mom. I think my mom had to take me. And I was so worried that it wasn't going to be good. And that there was going to be, it was going to be Wild Wild West 2.0.
Right. And like I liked Wild Wild West when it came out, but I remember also being 13.
Right. So 98, I would have been like 12.
Yeah, I was. You know? I think I was 13. Yeah.
So. Right. Yeah. I would have been so. I remember it fondly, and I was like, oh, if I watch this, and I just am like,
right,
sad, I will be so mad.
And before we get in the plot summary, I just want to say I think this had the same energy and same level of fun as 1999's masterpiece, The Mummy.
Yes. Yes.
It's just yes.
Like The Mummy isn't that I've seen that recently. That holds up so well. It's so good.
Just
same vein. Same vein. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Has aged remarkably well.
So Stu.
Yes.
Would you like to tell us what happened in this here picture show?
Boy, howdy do I. Our movie begins, as most Westerns do, with a howling revolutionary mob. Spanish power in Mexico, as announced in a title card, is collapsing in 1821 Mexico. And Governor Montero is trying one last time to get that Zorro. And to do that, he is threatening to execute absolutely normal people, while a revolutionary army under Santa Anna is marching his way. This is a foolproof plan, and he will absolutely get away with it.
I see absolutely no issues with this. This is completely plausible.
Right. Yep. Your power base is collapsing around you, but let's just be tyrannical one last time. Just, you know.
I also enjoy that we continue to have the Zorro motif of explanatory cue cards.
Exactly. Have you seen this one? It succeeds. Zorro is lured out, buckles are swashed, guns are fired, and two little boys help out Zorro by squashing a man to death with a giant rock.
Multiple men. It's not just one. These children commit multiple murder before they have hair on their chins.
Listen, this is revolutionary justice, and I applaud it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, these dudes deserve it. But,
right, these are colonizers. Out with them. Unfortunately for our friend Zorro, a suitably aged down Anthony Hopkins, which you love to see it, it works. It works better than if they used CGI.
Yes. Yeah, I will agree to that. Like, it is a little bit like, this man is not as young as I think he's supposed to be. I did the math. He was 61 when this movie was made.
And he's still, oh my God, he's still alive. Mm-hmm. Yep. Anthony Hopkins, ageless. Zorro saves the day. He swoops back to his hacienda, where he meets his loving wife and his infant daughter, who he coos over with a fantastic tale of princes rescuing princesses against tyrannical kings and other tyrants. Unfortunately, at that time, the enemy, Governor Montero, marches in as one last, you know, poke in the eye of Zorro. He's finally tracked him down. And in the ensuing fracas, Zorro's wife is killed. He is captured, and Montero kidnaps his child and takes her away to Spain. Whereupon Don Diego de la Vega, the alter ego of Zorro, slides into a 20-year depression, which is very convenient because that's where the next title card says it, how much time has occurred. We meet the Murrieta brothers, one of whom is Antonio Banderas. They are very
so much hair
with all the hair of an 80s heavy metal band. It's everything you want. You know, Antonio Banderas is playing bass for, I'm going to say, Slayer? I don't know.
Yo, yeah. Yes. Yeah, definitely.
So after ripping a wild chord on his bass guitar, the Murrieta brothers attempt to rob the payroll of the Mexican army, along with an exceptionally filthy man with only three fingers on one hand.
I love Three-Finger Jack. Oh, I loved him. He wasn't here for a long time, but man, he was here for a good time.
And he was our coot.
Spoilers.
Spoiler alert, there's your coot. Unfortunately for the Murrieta brothers, they are caught, and one of the Antonio Banderas' brother is unfortunately surrounded, and rather than be captured alive, he shoots himself. But as you are wont to do in this time period in the American West, Antonio Banderas swears revenge against those who have wronged him, including one what appears to be an American military captain, Captain Love. He is anything but. So,
but he has beautiful, luscious blonde locks.
He does. Perfect hair. You know, just every strand falling in perfection.
You just want to punch him.
little curl at the end. You love to see it.
Just want to shave it off. He's such an asshole.
Just you want to break your fist off in his face. So, Inigo Montoya, I mean, the Murrieta. Decides to track down Love and wreak his revenge. Meanwhile, we have a scene where Don Diego has returned from Spain and is sworn and meets with the local powerhouses, the Dons, the landholders of this part of California. And he promises to the people to bring them order and justice or whatever. He's just telling them whatever they want to hear.
Montero, I hate him so much.
He is a shit. However, I missed a scene. Before this, he goes to the prison where last we saw Don Diego, alias Zorro. And he's looking for Zorro, so just so he can spit in his face one last time and ensure that he is dead. And it ensues a scene similar to Spartacus, where a whole bunch of people stand up and say, "I am Zorro, and we are all Zorro."
We are all Zorro.
This spurs Don Diego into also swearing revenge for the man that stole against the man who stole his life. So through a series of events, including putting gunpowder in a lock and not blowing his own foot off, incredibly, he rolled nat 20s on all the way down. He escapes and is buried because it is deemed that he was dead, and he rises from the grave to seek his revenge. So Don Diego returns to the Batcave. But not before crossing paths with Antonio Banderas in a cantina, where, drunk and full of hatred, Don Diego teaches Murrieta, listen, you can't lash out with anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to something dark side. You get the picture.
You're mixing genres. Are you? Maybe not. I don't know.
Listen, Zorro and Star Wars take place in the same universe.
Zorro, Star Wars, and Batman.
Prove me wrong. So we then have an incredible training montage where Antonio Banderas goes from filthy, radical bass player in an 80s metal band to handsome fellow. And Anthony Hopkins goes from Old West Karl Marx into Tiny Mustache Haver.
Only for like one scene. He's like, I must have this tiny mustache, but right. I can't always have this tiny mustache because it gives away my identity.
Exactly. So I went from like working for the proletariat and encouraging the masses to rebel into fancy gentleman. After this stirring training montage, we have a series of other interesting fight scenes, including blowing up a Mexican army outpost, beating up several men, stealing a horse, attempting to steal said horse, failing, the horse not really giving a shit.
The horse steals itself.
The horse steals itself. The horse is just not having any of it.
No.
It's a good horse.
It's an excellent horse.
Let's see. Antonio Banderas proceeds to look too sexy. We're reintroduced to Elena, now a grown woman, as Catherine Zeta-Jones, and our collective jaws collide with the floor.
Great.
How drop-dead gorgeous and full of grace this woman is.
She is still that gorgeous. She's just... we'll talk about her. We will talk about her. We will talk.
Because not only is she beautiful, she's got a head on her shoulders. She's observant. She catches on to things. We see her walking through a market, and she's commented, be like, oh, your mother. I'm like, oh, I've never been to Mexico before. I've never been to California. Be like, but you look just like your mother. My mother died in Spain. Falsehoods. You have been lied to your entire life, Elena.
The scents,
the smells of SoCal come back to you.
That man is not your father.
And it's not Darth Vader either. It's Anthony Hopkins, alias Karl Marx, alias Don Diego de la Vega, alias Zorro, alias how much of this am I making up? You decide. There we then have more buckles get swashed, including during and after a dinner party, wherein we learn the evil Governor Montero's secret plan to separate California from not the United States, that hasn't happened yet. From Mexico, to make an independent republic that he can run as he sees fit because he has found gold. That's right, it's a Western because there's gold in them Var Hills. Mm-hmm. However, how does this gold come out? How is he going to do this without, like, upsetting the Mexican army? How is he going to do that without upsetting the United States? That's easy. Stamp the gold with a Spanish symbol so that everyone thinks that he brought it from Spain, that he stole it or whatever. And that's how that'll do.
Spoiler, doesn't work.
Doesn't work real well. He also employed slave labor, which, pro tip, bad idea.
And he did the thing that you don't do in Westerns, which was messed with a priest.
Don't
do that. Like a decent priest, like a nice one, you know, not a creepy one.
Exactly.
But like he messed with the priest, and priests don't do that. It gives you bad karma.
As you spelled out, especially a mendicant priest, vows of poverty. He doesn't have shoes. Bad move, dude.
It's bad.
And so his chief henchman, the aforementioned Captain Love, hits the priest, and we learn that the priest has been moved as part of the slave labor.
Mm-hmm.
Bad news. So, as part of this pitch, Antonio Banderas, in disguise, not as Zorro, but as a fancy lad, goes to this, and he expresses, disdain, but also callbacks to the 1920 movie with, like, oh, I have such a headache, and other things of that nature. Simple tricks, like, have you seen this one? He doesn't use those words exactly, but I was so hoping he would.
Can I tell you, I cheered.
Yes!
I was like, he's going to do a magic trick. He's going to do a magic trick.
Yee! Where'd you get that flower from, man? I love it.
So much joy.
Finally, we get to the last scene where increasing number of buckles are in turn swashed. Guns are fired, thrown away. The bad guys get stabbed or thrown over cliff faces. The formerly interned slave labor is now freed, and the mine is destroyed. We then finally have an epilogue where everything is happily ever after, and just echoing one of that opening scene, we have Antonio Banderas cooing and telling stories of derring do to his infant son.
Joaquin,
named after his deceased brother. Everyone applauds. Catherine Zeta-Jones is now our queen.
Yes, we love her. We love her so much. This, again, as we've said, I'm so happy it held up. And also, like, what a fitting, like, homage to the Zorro movies that came before.
Yeah.
It's different. It doesn't completely rehash the other two movies we've seen. Mm-hmm. It takes it. It makes it its own. I still think the 40s one is still my favorite Zorro movie.
Sure.
But this one has so much to love about it. And from the first moment it opens up, I just wrote in all capital letters, action.
Yes. A lot of that.
It's like the title cards are like James Bond, but make it Zorro.
Right. And it's like I said, like the I Am Spartacus scene in the jail, that did it for me too. Like, no.
I'm Zorro. They took my mask. My sword.
Silence, you old fool. I am Zorro. I am the man you want. I am the original.
Anyone can see you are too dope.
I am Zorro.
The dramatically rising from the grave, like Montero, you thought I was dead. You're going to wish I really was.
Also, like that scene in the jail, mm-hmm. like the play of the light on the faces of the prisoners, because they're they're like gnarly. Like,
yeah.
These dudes have been in prison and in the dark and like in like neglect for years, years mm-hmm. upon years upon years. It almost makes you think of, like, if you've ever been on the Pirates of the Caribbean ride or even seen the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, mm-hmm. that play of, like, the dirt and the grit and the gross and they're missing teeth and da-da-da and the light that goes along them. It's so ugly, it's beautiful.
Oh, yeah. It's the kind of dirt and filth where you're just like, I need to wash my hands.
Mm-hmm. I need to wash my entire self.
Right. I need, I can't even look in the mirror. I've gotten a beard already. What has happened?
And Anthony Hopkins, I mean, he's not even the best part of this movie, and he's great.
Yeah.
Like, he's fantastic. Just him bursting out of the ground, that, like, he spends the whole movie telling Antonio Banderas, that you need to stay calm. Like, you need to, you know, you will get your revenge, but you can't be controlled by your anger. You have to stay calm. And it's so, like, you watch him through the movie, and you can tell he is having a hard time with that in the quietest way. Like, when he first, like, he's grooming the horse, and Elena comes in and talks to him.
Mm-hmm.
She just thinks he's Antonio Banderas' servant. So in that conversation he has with Elena when they're brushing the horse, like, it's his first big conversation with his daughter, and he knows she's his daughter. And Montero's whole thing, like, he says to him when he steals her, I am going to raise her as mine. Mm-hmm. She is the child who should have been mine because you stole Esperanza from me, you know. Which,
boo.
Right? Like, first of all, one, that's not how any of that works.
That's not how women work, dude.
No, not at all. But also, like, in Anthony Hopkins now has this sort of feeling of, like, this girl is my child. She looks just like her mother, but she also loves my deepest enemy who has completely betrayed us, and she has no idea, and she loves him like a father. It's a real Rapunzel Mother Gothel situation.
Yes.
You know, like.
And how they disentangle that in this movie is so good. They could have, like, made it look like, oh, I just feel it in my heart. But, like, they just drop subtle things. Mm-hmm. And the way they build up Elena's character as being observant and picking up on things.
I also like Esperanza. So I will also say, like, at first I was a little bit like, Lolita is the name of Zorro's lady love. Like, no, it's Lolita. in my head, I justify this being like, no, this is like second dimension Zorro. The Don Diego and Lolita from 1940 have lived happily ever after, and they're nice and safe, and they never have any issues, and they've raised their fat children in their vineyards. This is like, you know, second dimension. This is another dimension, Zorro.
Right.
So he married someone else. He married Esperanza.
Oh, yeah.
But, like, I enjoy that they tell her she looks like her mother. She has her mother's spirit. But at the same time, she is just like her father. She is an excellent swordswoman. Like, she's better than Antonio Banderas.
Oh, yeah.
He has to cheat to beat her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has to cheat. She's better at him. She's just as good as Anthony Hopkins is. And, like, I like that they make it clear that she is Zorro's child, because she acts like Zorro. And the parts of her adoptive father, Montero, don't like are the parts of her that are Don Diego.
Yeah. And
I like that that's, like, that's not explicitly said, but it lives there.
Mm-hmm. It's, you can't fight that gene pool, you know? Mm-mm. Valuable lesson here.
Yeah.
Which, remember, kids, if your parent was a expert swords person, you too will be that good.
Just, well,
it's just she
did have training from the age of 4.
I'm just saying. Yeah, there's something true, innate yeah. there. You don't For just her, teach... Yes. You don't just teach any 4-year-old swordplay, you know?
Nor should you, because they're tiny psychopaths at that age.
Do you think that they, in that day and age, they used cardboard paper tubes to get them started?
Did cardboard exist then?
Probably. Probably
some kind of cardstock paper.
A stick.
Here, child, have a sharp, pointy object. Go. Which, oh my God, sharp, pointy object.
Yes,
one of the best lines in the movie. Like, when, right before the training montage starts between Anthony Hopkins and Antonio Banderas, when Anthony Hopkins goes to Antonio Banderas, who's holding a sword, do you know how to use that thing? And Antonio Banderas replies,
yes. The pointy end goes into the other man.
Which, not wrong.
Not wrong. I mean, they could correct.
However, there's a little bit more that goes into it, but yeah, you know, we won't get stuck in the weeds here.
Oh, that was some sharp humor there, Stu.
I'm on the cutting edge here. Oh gosh, And as we said earlier, like, there's just neat callbacks to, like, not only 1940, but also 1920. And I'm reminded of, I think it was the 1940 one where there's the confessional scene.
Yes.
So just like, oh, here we are back at horny confessional.
Mm-hmm. And, like, this is like confessional, like horny confessional times, like, 5.
Yeah.
Or times 10. Like, she's straight up like, I saw a hot guy today, and I really want to get with him.
In fact, he's my dad's sworn enemy, and I was just like, oh, but let's consider our options here.
And I will say, I have never had an experience like that in a confessional, nor could I ever bring myself to say something like that in a confessional. Like, I was like, oh, dude, no.
Forgive me, Father, for I am so goddamn randy right now. Like, I am hot to trot for this fella. I need your help.
Like, I know there's, like, a whole seal of the confessional, and, like, they can't talk about what is talked about inside of it. It's like, you know, like when you go to a lawyer's office or whatever it is. But, like, no, I would have to, I got to switch parishes now. I have to leave.
And let's do a tale of two Westerns here. We're on the top of Catherine Zeta-Jones. Is she has so much on-screen charisma. She's so stunningly beautiful. She's so slick. She's so smart. And she doesn't do any of that with her tits out.
No. Mm-mm.
Unlike, you know, who they did dirty to our girl Salma Hayek in Wild Wild West, where we can't have her on screen without being like, hey, did you forget she has boobs? Look at that rack.
And a butt. Boobs and butt.
Exactly.
And I mean, like, there's like one instance or two instances where I wrote down, like, oh, your 90s is showing, which is the sword fight she has with Antonio Banderas.
Correct.
With Zorro. She has a sword fight with Zorro. Mm-hmm. And she cuts his sleeve. And she's only wearing like a robe, and she's kind of got her chemise and like a little corselet on and some bloomers. And it's like, cause this is happening in the middle of the night. So it's like, she's gotten out of bed. Right. And they have their little duel. Although I do love the moment, which this was also kind of like a callback to like the 40s and the 20s ones where they're like, ha, and they're sword fighting. And then she cuts his sleeve. And then it's like, oh, I got to take the cape off. And she's like, okay, I got to take my robe off. And now we're going to get serious.
Now we're going to get to the business.
It's like, okay, like the sudden shift where this is no longer us playing games. We're now like actually going to fight. And I loved that moment. But then he starts cutting her sleeves, which reveal more of her skin. And then the way that he gets out of it is he somehow cuts her whole top off. And so that her boobs are only covered by her hair. And I was kind of like, eh, it's not the worst.
No, but you're right. It definitely dates it. And I distinctly remember that being in the trailer
when
I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Like, I know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you, 12-year-old boy, ooh.
Hey. This means something.
But it's not the worst. Like I said, it made me write down, like, oh, your 90s is showing. Mm-hmm. But she's competent through the whole movie. She's interesting. She's funny. She, like, you understand why Antonio Banderas is like, I like this lady.
Yeah, like, I would like that, please.
It's the same energy as in the other two Zorros, which maybe it's just the character of Zorro is inherently one who, you know, respects women.
he's a true gentleman.
Much like Batman, very similar. I mean, that's where Batman gets it from. But, you know, it's like he sees this pretty lady and he's like, you know what? That's my pretty lady. And I will do whatever that pretty lady needs me to do. And I really enjoy that. And I know I always sort of like feel bad for him when like he has the dance with her. Like we get another sexy dance. Throwback to the 1940.
What I even liked about that dance is it got sexier as the dance went on, and I was just like, yes.
Yep. Yeah. And at the end of it, because it's like this great sort of dance that they do, and at the end of it, he sort of like, he almost is like, you can almost see him being like, I really don't want to do this. But he then has to kind of throw her under the bus that she's the one that wanted to do the sexy dance. And you're just kind of like, ugh. Mm-hmm. But you can tell he doesn't want to do it.
Right. It's telegraphed. But like this, as they say, it takes two to tango. I like that Don Montero doesn't entirely buy it because kudos to Stuart Wilson, who played Montero in this movie. He looked like he was trying to make Zorro's head explode with his mind. It was just beautiful. Like, I'm trying my hardest to shoot daggers out of my eyes so that you will cease to be.
It's like, I am so mad. Multiple reasons. Also, I just enjoy that he's like, you think you can defeat Zorro? It doesn't matter. You can't. He's here. He's there. He's everywhere. It's like the Scarlet Pimpernel. He's like a bad penny. He keeps coming up.
Right. He's just going to go insane and they're going to have to put him in Arkham Asylum. And then now we're at an entirely different property.
Mm-hmm. Yep. just so good. And the end, I love that she wasn't like, I love... when they have the final confrontation between Anthony Hopkins, Montero, and Catherine Zeta-Jones at the mine. And she has learned the truth that Anthony Hopkins is really her father. And, you know, Montero is lying. And Anthony Hopkins is, I guess he's about to do, like, the killing blow. And she kind of is like, no, because, like
right, it's still her dad.
It's still her dad. Like, even though he's an absolute total shit, you know, it's only been about 3 hours that she's known for sure that this guy who has loved and raised her, loved in air quotes, for her whole life is actually the reason that her mother is not alive, you know, and why she didn't get to grow up with her family. So she has that kind of like, no. And then he grabs her and he puts a gun to her head and he does and Anthony Hopkins drops a sword, and then Montero is like, you'd think I'd actually kill my own child. And I'm like, you had to get one more dig in. Yeah, she's not yours. She's right. Not yours, you asshole. No.
Right.
And then he, you know, the bit of shenanigans. But it's like in that moment where she kind of finally is like, I'm done with this asshole. Mm-hmm. That whole sequence was just so wonderfully done. Like, so good. But she's never a damsel in distress.
Right.
Like, that happens, they figure their shit out, and then she runs around and she's the one who kind of is getting everybody out of all the enslaved people out of the cages and stuff.
She's not a sexy lamp.
No.
She's a sexy howitzer.
Yo. she's gonna like fuck a dude up. Like,
yeah, it's great. Which I think I like this term now, because you could also do this with Gal Gadot's Wonder Woman, a sexy howitzer.
Yes. And like, and the best part is like her sex appeal is not, it's like how I was like with the last movie watch, like, why is Randolph Scott so cool?
Randolph Scott.
Why is Catherine Zeta-Jones so cool? Like, she's so cool. She's the coolest person. She gives Antonio Banderas a run for his money.
Right. It's like having a fine meal, like a nice steak dinner. It's not just about the steak, which you need to have the right ingredients. You need to have a solid piece of meat. And it's also about the sides. You need to have a good baked potato, the proper amount of salt and pepper, the right thing to put on there, the sour cream, the chives, what have you, your broccoli, whatever. It all comes together as a whole. It's not just one thing. And that is why Catherine Zeta-Jones is everything you just said.
She's the best.
A package. Everything
she's
in there.
She's the best.
How about the opposite of Catherine Zeta-Jones? Captain Love.
Ugh. Okay. I forgot about the head in the jar.
I did too. I was like, wow. In case you're unfamiliar, I haven't watched this movie yet, which if you haven't watched this movie, stop right now. Watch it. You'll have a good time.
Yeah.
Are you back? Great. So apparently Captain Love, we find out, likes to keep trophies. And he has kept Antonio Banderas' brother's head in a jar and Three Finger Jack's eponymous hand also in a jar. And it is upsetting, and it happens after the fancy lads get a tour of the mining operation, and Zorro has to like hold in the rage and not leap across the desk and murder this man,
because he just has so it's Antonio Banderas's brother who has shot himself at the beginning of the movie. Hi, Purdy. Sorry. Our head of HR has come to inspect the podcast to make sure we're keeping in code with OSHA.
Well, of course.
But like they're in Love's office, right? And so when at the beginning of the movie, Antonio Banderas's brother shoots himself, Love, who is an asshole and can't just like. He has to do something. So he goes over and he cuts his brother's head off and takes it with him. And you're like, why? Why are you taking the head, sir? That's weird. And then you kind of forget about it until they're in this office at the mine, and he just picks, and he's drinking like some kind of liquor, and he just picks this giant jug up and plops it on the table, and here's bobbing in this whatever liquor it was, the head of Antonio Banderas' brother. And
Joaquin.
I was traumatized by this as a child.
It's upsetting.
Like, to compare this to The Mummy, which you compared it to earlier. If anybody remembers the scarab beetles under the skin in The Mummy, it's that. It's that level of shock.
That is a good comparison. It's an excellent comparison, because it's just like...
You're just like, why? And then the second thing of liquor just gets plopped up there with the... with the hand of Three Finger Jack, who it's just like, huh. And then Antonio Banderas has the balls to go and grab like a little cup and like scoop the head juice liquor and take a sip. I mean, like, one, that has to give you dysentery.
Yeah, that's not good.
That, you know, they weren't clean. Like, they were dudes living out in the desert.
Right.
Before this. So.
Right. I can't imagine what kind of alcohol would even be safe to drink. You know?
Right? Nah. Like,
I'm good, thanks.
And they sort of imply that it's water, which no.
No. It's going to be either, like you said, alcohol or some sort of other preservative that you definitely don't want to drink.
No. But. The vision of Antonio Banderas doing that is like, like, it makes you go like, he's kept his cool. He's learned the lessons.
He's totally going to kill this guy.
Oh.
Which, and spoilers, he does.
The poetic death of those two guys is so good. Montero gets dragged over the side of a cliff. And I think Love also, he falls onto Love. Is that what it is?
That's right. Love is crushed to death by the gold.
Well, they are both crushed to death by the gold. Mm. Like, it falls off the thing, and then the gold comes down, and it just goes ting, 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 and they go squish. And then everything explodes.
Everything explodes. It's definitely a late 90s movie, because we got to have some rad explosions.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
But, man... this movie just flipping ruled. It just ruled.
Can we talk about the one-liners?
Yes, please.
They're so good. Like, so I have so many written down. Like, when we're introduced to the Murrieta brothers as adults, and you think that Three Finger Jack is bringing them in as like a bounty.
Yeah.
And he's bringing them to these Mexican soldiers. I think they're Mexican soldiers.
Yeah.
They suddenly surprise, are not captured. And the one guy goes,
I thought you were tied up. That's because you're stupid.
And then they proceed to tie that group of Mexican soldiers to a giant cactus with no clothes on.
Not a great time, frankly.
No, but butts.
Yeah, just see man ass, like, but not the kind you really want to see.
No, it was there. So there was a butt cut in this movie. I also like when Antonio Banderas goes to attempt to steal Tornado 2. And he says, I'm going to give you the great honor of being my horse.
And the horse is like, I'm going to give you the great honor of being Zorro.
Yeah. And I just wrote down Chaos Horse.
Oh, yeah.
Like it's cartoonish. I don't mind it. It's just wonderful. Like, it's keeping the energy of the 1920s version is super zany.
Yeah.
He's parkouring all over the place. And this... particularly that sequence of stealing the horse keeps that energy. And I like he gets the cannon.
Yeah, right. Like, he busts into an army garrison at one point to try and get this horse, and they surround him. They corner him. He keeps slipping away. They get the biggest guy in the barracks to like try and corner him, and Zorro smacks him in the side of the head with like what appears to be a 6-pound cannonball several times. It's great.
And then
when they're not looking, he climbs atop a howitzer, and all the soldiers stand up, like shake whatever blow to the head they've taken, and there's Zorro perched atop the cannon with lit fuse in hand.
Like, one, when did you have time to load the cannon? Two, where did you get the fuse? Three, when did you light it? Four, I don't care.
Right.
I love this.
Number five, this is the coolest shit.
Also, no scooch needed. He hopped over the back. Clearly concealed trampoline, but we're going to ignore that.
Exactly. John Wayne, get yourself a trampoline.
Right. I also like when he finds out like that he's going to have to pretend to be a gentleman. And he looks at Anthony Hopkins and he goes, me, a gentleman? This is going to take a lot of work.
You know what I called that scene, that whole party? I called that the Fiesta of the Fancy Lads.
Oh, Caballero Nights. The return of Caballero Nights.
How silly of me. You're right. All the Caballeros.
Although these Caballeros weren't as fun.
No, they were all fancy, and some of them were middle-aged and flabby.
They were jerks.
And they were rich jerks. And
And then I forgot what part this was, but oh, I know what it was. It's Catherine Zeta-Jones after they have the sword fight where Zorro gets away and he cuts off her top. And her father, Montero, is like, you know, like he's like, are you okay? Whatever, whatever. You know, that was Zorro. And she goes, vigorous.
But he was young and vigorous. He was very vigorous, father.
And her dad, Montero, is just like, should I? I'm not even going to ask.
Yeah. I mean, technically, she's supposed to be like a 20-year-old woman, you know, like, girl, I get it. Like, it's Antonio Banderas. He's real cute. Like,
whoo. Damn. One interesting note I have here is the final big explosion of the mine. There was a sound that was like a puma screaming.
I had
Wasn't
it
that at the beginning of the movie too?
Yes. Okay. There are actually multiple cat sounds.
Okay. Thank you.
So for everybody out there in cowpunching land, it's about 2 hours and 5 minutes into the movie. You will hear the wildcat sounds through all of the explosions. Does anyone know why? I don't know why, but there's like a lion, a tiger, a puma. Why?
It doesn't matter. It's rad as hell.
It is. Also, did you notice Captain Love's saddle is leopard?
Right. Because we need another reason to hate this piece of shit. Look, his poor taste.
Like, one, where did you get that? Well, actually, no. I suppose there are leopards in the south western part of the United States. They are slowly coming back.
How do you like that?
I think there's like one or two that has little tracking things on them that you can go see them.
Now, one thing I thought was interesting about, speaking of Captain Love, is he's basically dressed like an American soldier. However, that is not how an American army captain would be dressed, like even the cavalry. I think, and he's also never referred to as like Captain Love, U.S. Army, which you would expect, but it's never referred to. I think Love is a self-appointed captain. In the 1830s and 40s, you have this streak of military adventurers in the United States called filibusters. And just like an old Southern racist trying to block valuable legislation back in the 60s, they're pretty terrible.
Is he like today you would have those guys that, I forget like what the term for them is, but they're like paramilitary, like they have like like they have like little weird like militia, the militia bros,
right? And they're about as effective. So yeah. a primo example would be a guy named William Walker, and a lot of these guys had a similar idea. It's like they took Manifest Destiny, which is already kind of a hurtful ideology, like we should have the entire continent sea to sea, and taking it further. So Walker took it on upon himself to invade Guatemala. And about went as well as you can imagine. He was very briefly president. You use that term lightly because he was allied with one side in a civil war in Central America. The government side that he was supporting, of course, it was rich landed interests because he wanted to create a new slaveholding state in Central America because by that time, in the 1830s, it had been abolished.
You can't see my face, but I'm disgusted.
Exactly. Hence why I'm saying, like, would you be surprised if I told you that Walker was a Southerner?
No. Really?
Color me. I know. Color me surprised, too.
What?
Anyway, Walker got cornered in a house. I'm pretty sure the house was on fire, and he died.
Shame.
One of his last things was to petition the United States for help. Because he's just like, I'm doing this to spread American democracy. And one of the few good moves of the Franklin Pierce administration, Pierce told Walker to go pound sand.
Wasn't Franklin Pierce the handsome one?
He was the handsome one. And our drunkest president.
Oh,
and one of
really?
And one of our worst.
Drunk it? Really?
But he wasn't a fun drunk. He was a sad drunk. The saddest.
Huh. Anyway, I'm surprised he is the drunkest one.
He died of cirrhosis of the liver in 1868.
Oh, that's unpleasant.
Yeah.
Ugh, what a way to go, man.
There's your bright and sunny presidential history corner with Stu Kaufman.
I like how every time we bring up a president, I'm like, you've got like all these facts. And I'm like, wasn't he the blah, blah, blah one?
the handsome guy? Yeah, he was. They called
wasn't
him old.
Wasn't he the boring one? Wasn't he the one that wore fringe?
That's Teddy Roosevelt, our right? fringiest president. Fringe for days. The Rough Rider, everybody.
I know, like, next to nothing, yet one really obscure, strange fact.
All right, what do you got for Millard Fillmore?
Oh, Millard Fillmore? Didn't he have bushy hair?
No.
No?
He was just boring.
Well, there's a lot of boring ones. Hang on, I'm going to Google.
He's our most boring.
I'm going to look up Millard Fillmore. Oh, he looks like a Millard. I'm so sorry. And apologies to any Millards out there. I'm sure you're great.
Like, if a ballpoint pen was a person, just like a regular black ballpoint pen.
He's a number two pencil. I could use him on my Iowa test.
Like, he's the kind of president that they're not, like, he doesn't even get, like, a college dorm named after him in his home state.
Related searches on Google for Millard Fillmore. Millard Fillmore, Alec Baldwin. I can see it.
Right?
I see it.
He's like slightly puffier Alec Baldwin.
Yes. So I think Van Buren. Yeah, I had Martin Van Buren in my head. He is the one with the fluffy hair. Also a number two pencil.
Yep.
But with a fancy eraser on top.
Exactly. And apparently he had great taste in whiskey and spoke Dutch as his first language.
Good for him.
Our only president to not speak English as a first language.
Huh. We learn things.
Exactly. We learn things here on Cow Punchers. Which, speaking of learning things, you ready to do some segments?
Let's do it.
How about the costume corner? Holy shit.
Okay. So, excellent costumes. The costume designer for this... I apologize if I mispronounce her name, but her name is Graciela Mazon. And she is known for The Mask of Zorro, Vertical Limit from 2000, and From Dusk Till Dawn, 1996.
Oh man, Vertical Limit. That's a movie I haven't thought about in a while.
She, in 2019, is her most recent credit for Miss Bala, which is that one with, It was the one where she's like a she's like a female assassin kind of.
Okay.
It had a lot of buzz when it came out. But like she did Nacho Libre. She also did the sequel to this movie, The Legend of Zorro, and Once Upon a Time in Mexico. So like she's got a bunch of good stuff here.
Hell yeah.
So for the costumes, like I would not call this a historically accurate movie.
No.
Unlike Appaloosa that we just saw, which was like.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if with Appaloosa they told us, like, they actually used clothes from the era. Like, you know.
Or, like, made, like, studied clothes and, like, did reproductions. Like, that I would not be shocked by. But I didn't care with this one because it was so fun. They dressed Catherine Zeta-Jones in, I would call more Mexican styles than Spanish styles. Because I was looking up. I think, what is this movie? The 1840s, 1860s?
1840s, yeah.
Yeah, so I looked up some of the, like, Spain styles, right? And much more like how we would think of Victorian, like, much more like that.
Yeah.
Whereas this, it's, I would call this, like, not fantasy Spain, but, like, definitely influences of Spain, Mexico. All of her outfits are beautiful.
Right. If you were to go back to the 1840s and buy a lithograph of somebody from Spain, this is probably what you'd get.
Yeah. Like, it's definitely like, it's like, she is Spain. Even though she is Welsh.
Right. Cue the Spanish guitar.
Right. Which we should talk about the music. But one thing that I wish they had done a little more clearly is, so we have the 20-year time jump, and the men very clearly progress in time in their costumes. Like in the early, in like the early parts of the movie, the beginning, the fashion of the men is definitely much earlier. When we get back 20 years later, like they've progressed. It's a little bit more like they've got top hats, all that kind of stuff going on. The women, not so much. The women seem to be stuck much more in time. And really the only woman we really get is Catherine Zeta-Jones and like glimpses of the other women at the party. And then other than that, the like regular people, it's what shade of taupe are we going to put them in?
Right. Dust.
Right. But that's like my one quibble is I wish there was a clearer story told in the time, in the fashion progression, because the men had it, but the women didn't.
Right. They missed the opportunity for like at least the 1820 scenes to like show like the high waist, like almost like Regency. Yeah.
And we get that a little bit with like Esperanza's outfit, but again, she's sort of like, it's like, is she just getting ready for bed? Because with those outfits, like the, you know, what we would think of as Regency, it's very, they're almost like nightgowns anyway.
Pretty much.
But I would have liked to have seen more of that. Otherwise, like the costumes were great. They were a little bit, there was some 90s fever dream in there and I was happy to see it, you know? Not as costumey as Wild Wild West, but still living there a little bit.
Right.
Especially in Catherine Zeta-Jones's outfits.
Better execution, I would say.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Like by a country mile.
Her costumes, I would say, fall into the realm of well-done fantasy historical lady outfit.
Right.
But I didn't care. They fit with the zaniness of this movie. And also the Zorro outfit was cool as hell.
Looked
great. They didn't need, like, I loved all the, like, gold trim on his hat. Like, when he finally got the full Zorro outfit, I'm just like, let him keep the goatee.
Yeah, right. Because give us a little stash, yeah.
They did the reverse. Because in the 1921, he adds the horrible mustache. And then takes it off when he's not Zorro, when he's Don Diego. Whereas Antonio Banderas, when he is... oh gosh, I've lost the character name. Alejandro. When he's Alejandro, he's clean shaven, but when he's Alejandro pretending to be the fancy man, he's got a goatee. But then when he's Zorro, no goatee. And I'm like, no, give him back the goatee.
Right, just at least give us the stash, you know? Give us that.
Yeah, just a stash. And it was a good fake stash.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good fake stash.
And here's my segue into postcard moment. Is this movie, with its costumes, its setting, and everything else, it was like romantic, but in like the traditional sense of romantic. Like, mm-hmm. here's this incredible swashbuckling era. Just so cool. Which is my postcard is the scene where we see Montero coming ashore at night. And I was like, oh, it's a pirate movie. Because you see this tall ship, so far off the coast, and a ship coming and a small boat being rowed towards. And there's like burning torches at the beach. I'm like, we're going to go look for pirate gold, lads.
We're going to go dig up some bodies, which is perfect because it leads into the prison scene, which looked like something out of the ride Pirates of the Caribbean.
Right. Perfect.
Oh, that. We should do that.
Mm-hmm. In case you forgot, this is a swashbuckling movie. Here's...
Let's buckle some swashes.
Right.
Mine, similar vein, I don't know why. This movie was shot beautifully. There were a lot of, beautiful vista shots. It didn't skimp on that at all.
No.
But for whatever reason, I love the Z on fire.
Right.
When Montero looks out and there's just a field on fire and it's a giant Z, I'm like, yes, more of that, please.
The movie could have just ended there with Montero's mind collapsing. Just mm-hmm. no, I thought I was free of him.
it was so good. It was like, yes.
Grand. Oh. So you ready for the saloon search?
Yes.
We really only had one true drinking establishment, and that's the cantina where Don Diego and Alejandro cross paths. And I would have some sangria there. It's opposite. It's this neat, it's a gallery of arches, and a very open cantina, high ceiling. It's across this plaza from a flower market, and there's an ambient dog.
You can't complain about the ambient dog, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Also, decent bartender. He knows this guy's having a hard time. Yeah, here you go, man.
Yeah, let me know what you need, man.
Mm-hmm. I would drink there. When Montero is not in control, I would drink in his hacienda.
Yeah, that was a pretty sweet hacienda. I want to have a fiesta there with some of my amigos and I.
Just walking in and the whole courtyard is just decorated with the flower petals.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. You just know it's like an early summer or late spring evening. Like, it's been a hot day, but it's starting to get cool at night. And you're like, yeah, we're going to have a good time.
And they have that courtyard table. Like, come on.
Both places... you're drinking wine. Maybe you might have some high-end tequila, but that's a wine-drinking place.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would sign up.
Yes. So, yeah. Go to your local cantina. How about a face?
He happens to be a sweet-looking dude.
Mine is Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Just any Catherine Zeta-Jones all the way down.
Right. It's when she's rescuing Don Diego, looking like an absolute badass. With the conflict on her face, it's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
I went with a silly angle. I went with Anthony Hopkins as Karl Marx. About a half hour in the movie, it's he's freed from the jail and he's got the big communist manifesto beard.
You could just tell the story of Anthony Hopkins in this movie based upon what wig they put him in. You have the young man wig and goatee when he's mm-hmm. supposed to be, I don't know, 40 something, it's okay. They did okay. And then you have him. I mean, we could do with less self-tanner. Like, just put in less spray tan. Mm-hmm. And then you have him, like, Karl Marxing it up. and then he just has, like, slightly more combed with beard.
Right. He's just like, oh, it's Karl Marx, but he's going to go out for a night on the town.
And then we have slicked back long hair with tiny mustache.
That's just pencil-thin mustache. Just drawn on there.
And then we have ponytail Anthony Hopkins, no facial hair.
Right. You
tiny
know,
glasses.
Your one uncle who's got a boat.
Yeah, maybe, right.
He might live on that boat.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. The Anthony Hopkins, thank you for that beard.
And I mean, honorable mention, Antonio Banderas as Alejandro lighting the cannon on fire.
Oh, God. Yeah, exactly.
He's at his most Zorro.
Yeah, hands out the match in one hand, just being like, what are you going to do now, assholes?
Like, where did you get that? Where was it?
You know what? Forget it. That's cool as shit.
Like,
I'm proud.
This is a movie that is a prime example of how to get away with Bugs Bunny bullshit.
Right.
And, like, no questions asked. I do not care.
Big spaghetti energy.
Oh, so much spaghetti energy. A flippin' delight of spaghetti energy with the gravy on top.
Mm-hmm. And it's ciabatta, or, like, you know, ciabatta level energy, not like bullshit. Like,
no.
Like, was it the Sertana we watched? What the hell was that? The middle span of this year's Ciabatta-thon. Dig your grave, friend. Ciabatta's coming. Yeah.
That was partially in Italian.
Yeah. Made with like $30 in a paperclip.
Yeah, no. This was true. This was not a ciabatta. This was ciabatta. This was the mm-hmm. full fat ciabatta.
Oh yeah, full fat ciabatta. Right. We got the good shit. We just got paid. We went to the market. We got the good shit.
Mm-hmm. We went for, instead of that like low tier charcuterie board, which is mm-hmm. like a Lunchable. We went to Wegmans. And we got one of the, like, pre-made on, like, an actual piece of wood.
Oh, my God. You're right. Lunchables are basically just low-brow
charcuterie. You've never heard that meme?
No, I haven't. That's great.
Where that's why millennials, that's why we love charcuterie boards, because we were given Lunchables as children.
See, my mother never bought me Lunchables. She said they were too expensive, which she's probably right.
Yeah, I could never get past the cold meat. I mean, there's a reason I'm a vegetarian, which is just the fact that I don't like meat. Mm-hmm. But that was a clear sign of things to come, of Melissa just being like, oh, I would eat that.
Like, this is weird.
But the cheese, I would demolish the cheese.
Yeah.
So good.
I guess that leaves us with the coot.
After all, he's not a bad old coot.
You mean Three Finger Jack?
Yeah, Three Finger Jack, the world's filthiest man.
Okay. Okay. We didn't have him for a long time.
No.
But we had him for a good time because we got two scenes from him. The first one where he's pretending to be the bounty hunter. Mm-hmm. And then it's revealed that he's their buddy. And, like, he fucking goes to bat for them.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, like, this guy is a badass. I love him. And which ends up in him getting captured. And then when Antonio Banderas, as a fancy man, goes to the mine for the tour, right, with the other caballeros, like, Three Finger Jack kind of confronts Captain Love and just starts ranting at him in, I get, what is that? Frontier gibberish, yes. Just is, like, hollering at him and then, like, leaps on a mine cart or something and then, like, flies through the air to attack him. And, of course, Love shoots him dead, which is, like, disappointing as hell. Mm-hmm. But it's so metal. Like,
yeah.
It is the most metal way in a Western for you to go out.
100%.
Like, and it's just amazing. Like, no notes. With excellent, like, you know, work, sir.
You know, and there's Alejandro just like kicking out a fat lick on his guitar, just like, mm-hmm. while it happens.
Yep. Excellent coot.
And if Amy were joining us, I'm sure she'd also say every single man in that jail.
My God, just a jail of coots.
That's where coots are stored for future use.
Coot breeding ground.
A coot granary. There's just a hopper full of coots.
A coot silo.
Exactly. What kind of flavor coot do you want? Do you want drunk? Do you want gold obsessed? What do you like?
Trains? No trains?
Trains?
Teeth? How many teeth? Medium teeth? Large teeth? Small teeth?
I'll take one tooth, please.
Ah, extra small. Okay.
Do you want tall coot? Tiny coot?
Skinny coot? Fat coot?
What lady coots. Coot? We have a selection of lady coots.
Mm-hmm. We keep them in a separate side, but
yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, we got ones that are like, you know, we got granny witches that are like healers, and we just like batshit insane. What do you want?
Mm-hmm. Also, I have looked up something about Three-Fingered Jack.
Okay.
Who is played by L.Q. Jones. Guess what one of the movies he was in?
What?
Ride the High Country.
No kidding.
He's Silvis Hammond. He's one of the Hammond brothers.
Oh, shit. Oh, how do you like that?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Small cow punching world.
You'll love to see it. You love to see a coot get around.
Right?
So he died in both movies. One, he was irredeemable, and this one, here's to you.
So his mini bio on IMDb is like, again, metal as hell. This tall, sandy-haired, mustachioed actor from Texas, born Justice McQueen, adopted the name of the character he portrayed in his first film, Battle Cry, 1955.
Damn.
Yep.
A legend.
Yep.
That's cool as hell.
All right, sir. All right.
So, Mel, how do you feel about this thing?
This is a 5 out of 6 for me. Like, there's it's a couple 90s things in there that kind of creep in, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But this is a pure delight, you know, like, get your popcorn, get a pizza, just have a flipping ball with it. Like, mentioning the music. The soundtrack is so good.
Mm-hmm.
It's flamenco dancing.
Yeah.
The sound of the shoes. So somewhere in the world there exists a Zorro the Musical. Did I see it in about 2008, 2009 in London when it was on stage? Yes, I did. Was a large part of it, like, they brought flamenco dancers from Spain to be the dancers in it? Yes. Right? And listening to the soundtrack of this movie reminded me of that. And I was like, this is so perfect.
Yeah.
This is so delightful.
It is just a fun movie. It is just
so good. So, yeah. It's nearly perfect. It is a 5 out of 6 for me on Sabata scale, regular scale, all the scales.
See, this is a 6 for me, because as soon as I finished watching it, I was like, I could watch this again right now. It's just, it's long, but you don't care.
No, I didn't have a moment where I'm like, I have to check the time.
No.
I didn't have that. And like, you get a training montage. Yeah. You get like an awesome female character. Like, you get like, everybody's cute. You know, you think you get two badass bad guys. Like, you hate them. Like, I find the opening scene where Montero kidnaps Elena so difficult.
Yeah.
It's so upsetting. Like, this man is pure evil.
You can't wait to see this guy get crushed by a wagon full of gold.
No. It's like, you're like, yes. Like, when he's being dragged to his death, I'm like, yeah, you deserve that, sir. You are a jerk.
I was like, look at that wagon. Look what it's dragging.
What does it hold? What does it hold?
A rat bastard, I'll tell you that.
And then when Love gets killed, like, again, just like, oh, like you feel no regrets about either of you guys. It's like, it's nice to have a movie with bad guys who are such clear bad guys, but layered onto that, as horrible and evil as Montero is, there's this weird, like, how dare you make me feel some sympathy because he does somehow love Elena? Like,
yeah.
I hate that. I hate it. Yeah. I hate it. It makes it worse.
How dare you, movie?
Yeah. Makes it worse. It makes it worse. Mm-hmm. So good.
So there you have it. Watch Mask of Zorro from 1998.
It's great.
We're not done quite yet because this is our 110th episode. That means it's another installment of Was It West?
Oh, no. Oh, God.
So, okay. So, Mel, it's geography quiz time.
Okay, I'm on my own here.
So no matter what happens.
I win.
Yeah, exactly. You win. But it is pass fail, so.
Shit.
So. For those who haven't listened before, Mel will get 1 point if she can correctly identify whether or not it was in the American West, and she gets an extra point if she can identify where it was, either the state or the nation. So, starting off with our Christmas episode, episode number 101, A Cowboy Christmas.
Not West.
Correct.
I'm gonna say it was filmed in Canada.
It was filmed on location in Canada.
It gave the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford vibes.
That gag will never not be funny.
No.
All right. Episode 102, 2019's Badland, which we learned to love.
Oh, I love Badland. Why do I love Badland? Yes, West.
Correct.
Arizona?
It was California.
California.
Episode 103, 1974's Blazing Saddles.
Yes, West.
Correct.
California.
It was on location in California.
That soundstage was a real soundstage.
It was in California.
They went to the Chinese theater. It was the real one.
The real Count Basie. episode 104, 1966, The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Not West.
Correct.
Spain or Italy. Spain.
It was Spain.
That was a guess.
It was a good pick. Successful. Episode 105, 1971. Dig Your Grave, Friend. Sabata is coming.
Not West.
Correct.
That has to be like Spain.
It's Spain.
Yeah.
I bet they didn't even get permits to make that movie.
No, not even a little bit.
There's probably a missing scene where like some angry person is like, get off my property. Or well, they say that in Spanish probably.
It's not happening.
Yeah, the Spanish version of coot talk. 106, episode 106, 1967's Death Rides a Horse.
So it's a spaghetti.
Yep.
So not West.
Correct.
Italy?
Nope, it was Spain.
Oh, all Spains.
Mm-hmm. You're kind of going to get two gimme points on this one, so just get creative with your answers. Episode 107, 2002's Spirit, Stallion of the Cimarron.
Yes, West.
Okay.
And... I'm going to say it took place everywhere.
Oh, Idaho.
all of the California, Wyoming, Ohio.
West Dakota.
Ass.
Colorado Texas. I don't know.
Where was the DreamWorks studio? There.
Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Episode 108, 2008's Appaloosa.
Oh, yes, West.
Okay.
It was very correct. New Mexico.
It was, in fact, New Mexico. Good
Fuck
pick.
Yeah!
Episode 109, 1962, Ride the High Country.
Yes, West. It was in that national park.
That's right. Can you name the state?
Colorado?
California.
And hey, I should get a gold star for knowing it was in a national park.
You do, because they proudly announced it. And finally, today's...
And then set it on fire.
Yeah, right. Carelessly. Smokey is very upset.
Yeah.
Finally, today's episode 110, The Mask of Zorro.
Yes, West.
Okay. Actually, no. No, that's wrong. I'm sorry.
Mexico?
It was in Mexico.
Okay.
So
interesting.
Mel, that is the best score I think to date on this podcast. That's 17.
Hey, look at me go. See, it's because I don't have like the pressure of competition. So I'm less nervous.
Amy's the one that makes you sweat. I get it.
Also, I'm slowly learning about, like, if you guess Spain or Italy, you're going to be right 50% of the time.
And that, exactly. And I'm sure, like, we watch enough of these, we'll catch on and be like, wait a minute, I'd recognize that ground cover. That's Italy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, like, you know, with the, particularly, like, the soundstage ones, I feel like these ones were particularly easy simply because, like, Blazing Saddles and Mark of Zorro, like, it's a little bit, like, I mean, I should have known about Mark of Zorro, or Mask of Zorro, but, like, it's like, this is clearly, like, there's some sound stages going on here.
Right. Some bullshit. Yeah, exactly. They're leaning into the kitsch with this one. Thank you, Mel Brooks.
Right.
Well, that's it from us. I want to thank everybody for listening. It means a lot to us. If you want to help grow the podcast, please spread it by word of mouth. Tell your friends, tell your horse, tell your local coot. And make sure you tell Zorro. Zorro, if you're listening, we'd love to have you.
Please come on the podcast. We love you. I will clap at all of your handkerchief tricks.
Absolutely. I will be in awe. So, yeah, tell your local Old West vigilante. Tell Batman while you're at it. If you have a question, a concern, a comment, or a movie you'd like to suggest, you can reach out to us at our email, which is cowpunchersshow@gmail.com. So that's two S's next to each other there. Or you can check out a selection of our landscapes we've picked, the faces we've spoken about, and assorted other jokes and japes over at our Instagram.
Cowpunchers Pod.
Be sure to listen in next week as we begin a new tradition over here on Cowpunchers Musical May. So get ready for some song and dance. So once again, thank you for listening. I have been, as always, your real deputy, Stu Kaufman.
And surprise, I am not your deputy. My name is Melissa Huggins.
Y'all watch yourselves out there on the trail. Hee-yah! Thank you.